Welcome back, everybody, to the Rugby Muscle Podcast. My host is always TJ. And today, joined, I think this is your hat trick, Dan. I think you might even be our first hat trick guest that we've had on. And that mostly
I am honoured.
Yeah, you should be. But I was going to downplay it straight away. I don't know why. Just to say, because of that first one, we booked before the lockdowns all happened. And then we had them in the middle of just as the lockdowns were starting. And we were just drumming up ideas. I'll always remember that because that was like, that was right at the start of the world. Well, we thought it might change forever. And then it seems like we're nice and far removed from it. You almost thankfully forgot that it ever happened. But how you been?
Yes. Thankfully, also busy. I mean, as you say, the lockdown was very strange time. I think lots of people were trying to work out a lot of things about what they were going to try and do and never quite achieved all the things that they wanted to do. But it was a good way of resetting. And actually, I worked out what I really wanted to concentrate on, which was great. And it's a well-worn phrase, but I became far more intentional about writing about coaching and writing about learning and learning about learning. So some of the answers I'm going to give today are very much based on what happened during the lockdown in terms of me really putting effort into that. But other than that, yeah, lots of interesting things going on. Coaching a hell of a lot more now than I was before lockdown. Probably, at least five nights a week, which is fantastic. Tiring, yeah, but fantastic.
That is awesome. So where are you coaching right now then?
So last season, as the I'm not sure when this podcast is going to go out, but our season in the UK is winding down now.
Yeah.
So this last year, I was with the University of Bristol Women, mainly with the second team, with the Bristol Schools under 18s team, with the Bristol Bears Academy 14s to 16s. So they were my main sort of day to day or evening to evening coaching roles, as well as obviously doing the Rugby Coach Weekly.
That's great. Because what I like about you is, especially, I didn't know how much actual coaching you did until we had that first chat. Because, you know, there is, I feel like this is the same in exercise science as well. There is quite often a gap between, you know, what you see in academics and what you see in the literature and stuff, and then what you see actually happening. And there seems to be always like a disconnect from the reality of not even necessarily what works, but what is the reality of what goes on in coaching and what we should be doing about it. And I think it comes from both sides needing to be doing a better job of essentially communicating, which is very appropriate because I was I had another coach on a couple of weeks ago on the podcast, and I said that communication is almost essentially the number one thing you look for as a coach, because if you cannot communicate yourself properly, it doesn't matter what your intentions are. It doesn't matter. It'll end up getting lost. So I think you do a good job of bridging that gap. And I'm excited to delve into some of the questions I have or the topics that we want to discuss today. So that's cool.
It's worth picking up on that point, actually, because I've had periods of time when I've been writing about coaching rugby and I've been doing very little coaching just because of changes in coaching roles. And maybe I've had 6 months of not actually out on the grass as much as I want. And therefore you lose sense of what's working and why it's working. And you don't want your players to become just one long experiment for what you're trying to talk about. But the other thing I think is important is that it's very easy to talk about the highlights of your coaching and come in and do a one-off session. And my CPD sessions are probably my best sessions because I'm giving them all the things which I really enjoy doing. I know land. I've done 1,000 times before. The real coaching comes when you are week 8 of the season with the same players and you've got to try and solve some problems. And you can't gimmick your way through it. You've got to be doing things which are working, and it's hard. And I think it's very easy for coaches to come in from the outside and say, oh, you want to be doing this, this, and this, because the reality is that you need to know your players, You need to know where they're going. You need to know where you're at with them, because otherwise things won't land, and they won't land, and they won't be effective, and they won't be effective in the long run.
Yeah. And I think it's also just one of those things where you said week eight, if I was to piggyback off that example, we could move on to maybe we get to week 10 and the same problems are still happening, because that's when I think it's really, that's when the questions are really asked of you as a coach. Like, anyone can correct a problem easily. And if their first solution works, or if potentially not even their solution works, it's just more times, more repetition, et cetera. And the players end up solving the problem themselves. But sometimes these things take a long time to fix, and that's where it gets really hard, I think.
Yeah, and it's sometimes the players themselves don't actually know what they're doing wrong, and they're identifying the wrong areas. And you know that, but you've also got to build with them. You can't say, no, you're wrong. You've got to be doing something else. The amount of times that, say, at halftime, we're not doing so well, and the girls in particular would say, right, on Monday, Dan, we've got to be doing this, this, and this. And I'd be thinking, yeah, we probably do, but there are things, two or three moments down the line, which need to get right to get there.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't want to, you want to build your program, whether it's an individual program, you might be doing on the one-to-one on a fitness or with a team. You want to build your program with your players, but understand that often players don't know what's good for them in learning terms, because there's a great survey, and I can't remember the link to the survey, is where it says how players rate their coaching, and they rate the coaching on lots and lots of different factors, and the reality is it's not actually what's been good coaching. One of the classic moments is, I love this coach, they're the best, because we always get cake. Now, yeah, that would be great, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're a good coach. Or we love the sessions because they're really, really energetic, and we go away energized. And the thing is that's great. I mean, we're not saying don't have energized sessions, but an energized session doesn't necessarily mean it's an effective session. It's more important that we understand, have the players moved their dial in terms of their learning and understanding a bit further towards competency and mastery, understanding that under pressure, even if you've got all those skills to hand, you're not always going to be able to execute them in that moment for a variety of reasons. So, you know, a referee or umpire call, the weather, the fact that the opposition are just on that day a bit better, or just think a bit faster. So our problem as coaches is sometimes our players don't know what's good coaching. We're struggling to try and work out what's good coaching. Our players don't know what's good coaching. So we're all drifting around a little bit, slightly half blind to where we're going.
It's funny because, again, this same podcast I had with Colin, he's doing his master's in, you know, it's coaching science and leadership, I think, or something along those lines. And his top priority is getting the players on board and, you know, showing empathy in every area. But at the end of the day, and he's not against, like, this view of, hold on, sometimes you do need to draw that line because they don't know what is best for them. But then how you tackle that is difficult, because you also have to tackle that in a way that they actually think it is their idea, because that's how you get people on board. Everyone that's done their, even their level one or 101 or whatever in coaching, it always starts from, like, the biggest insight you get is, oh, the only way you get people to do stuff is by asking questions. So you have to get them to eventually give the answer that you want, because sometimes they keep giving their own answer. But as you just said, sometimes that's actually, it's the same thing as, like, Planet Fitness that sells memberships and gives you free pizzas on Fridays. And it's like, you want that, but you shouldn't really have that, you know?
Well, a good coach will help you retell a story. Questioning is good. I mean, there is, I've got a book in front of me actually called The Myths of Sports Coaching. And one of the things it talks about is, questioning is not the panacea, it's not the golden shot to improve coaching. It is part of a process. Sometimes you've got to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes there are moments where it is, right, we're going to go in this direction. You've got to follow me. But also, there's a very good theory out there, self-determination theory. And one of the things that is very important in that is autonomy, where the players feel that they have ownership of the direction they're going, they can make decisions. And that's often misinterpreted, because having a feeling of autonomy is more important than actually having the autonomy. So feeling mm-hmm. that you have some sort of agency in your decision-making is important. And of course, you want to have that, but the coach can't let you just fly off in all sorts of directions, because otherwise you're going to have a leg day every day, because yeah. that's the thing which you enjoy most. You get the most out of it. And actually, I mean, here I am talking as if I know anything about health and fitness, and every day I've had a good leg day today, whatever that means. you've got, as a coach, to say, here's a menu of decisions that we are going to make together. Let's select which ones we think are most appropriate, as opposed to them flying off. Otherwise, the girls, we work very hard together on what we wanted. But there are times when I'm saying, we're not going to spend much time on that. And you're going to have to believe me, we're not going to spend much time on that. And eventually, maybe they'll be convinced. But that, as you say, it's the communication piece.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also one of those things where, as a coach, it's, well, I think there's two things, right? Number one, it's, if anything, your job as a rugby coach, and I've even thought about this, even from a professional standpoint, where you've got 2-3 sessions a day, there's still only so much things that you can work on. So more often than not, people think it's like, oh, you should do this and you should do this. You can't do more things without taking away some of the other things. And so more of your job is about what not to work on. Like, people say, oh, we got to work more on our lineouts, or we got to work more on this. Okay, what has that got to take? Where has that got to fit in? Because something else has got to go, because we've only got 3 hours, 4 hours a week at most. And rugby, why we love rugby is because it is so bloody complex. But that's the art, and that's where you need the coach. And that's where, again, that's another thing that maybe it's a social media thing, because I see it all the time in fitness. Oh, I want to do, you know, you get, and actually I've seen it in the coaching space as well. Everyone's coming up with more and more, everyone's sharing their ideas, which is great. But now you're just adding more and more things that people are either feeling like they need, or they're getting FOMO that they're not doing. And essentially, because it's on social media as well, because it's this nice, easy to swallow 30-second thing that looks fun, it takes the place of the basics, and that gets a lot more traction on social media than the basics. But sometimes we'll touch on developing skills in rugby in a little bit, but I think I'd like your reflections on that, whether maybe social media has changed our mindset with coming up with more and more ideas, and the difficulty that we have now with actually being able to implement all of them.
Well, I think there's several things, and I will address that social media thing in a moment. I think, first of all, it's very important to understand rugby is very complex. It's not a simple game, but we as coaches have got to try and create sessions which are understandable. People can work out where they fit in. And the point you make about what you've got to give up, the opportunity cost of doing more line out, is we don't do so much more on our handling. And it's amazing to me that almost that penny dropped this year more than ever, when the players would say to me, we did reviews at just before Christmas. So probably had a dozen girls at various different stages on Zoom. We went through things that they were doing, had a set of questions. And one of the things he said, I asked specifically, is what do we do more of, however, given that we've got to give up something else? And that was a good challenge for them, because they said, yes, we need to, let's say we need to do more fitness. Okay, so what do we give up? And that was, then they were thinking, Well, I'm not sure. I don't think we can give up this, this, and this. I said, so these are things that are important. Now, your point about social media is, it's both good and it's both probably, no, I wouldn't say bad, but it is, it frustrates us because you're right, the FOMO, oh, wow, I've seen this, I've seen this. So, you know, to drop a name, Ben John, the rugby trainer, he's got some great stuff out there. And I was very lucky enough because he was at the Ospreys when I was coaching there. So he was a great player to coach. I mean, he is a lovely guy as well. Works really hard. He's a real student of the game. And he's seen that in the last 4 years, he's just his sight's taken off. And he is constantly having to, well, he is constantly having to produce more and more content. He is content driven. Mm-hmm. And to a certain extent, there is only so many ways to do something. But he is under pressure because he needs to produce more content. And he does a great job of it. But it comes down to the difference between variation and progression. We on the courses, coaching course 101 is you do a drill or an activity or a game, whatever we want to call it, and in order to tick a box to move on to the next stage, you've got to show progression in the drill. And that actually, to a certain extent, is a mistake because it's not about progression, it's about variation. So I'm far older than you, but if you can remember back to maths classes when you were, say, 10 or 11, you were given, you did a little bit of maths. I can't remember what you do at 10, but let's say you were given a long division. That's probably when we were 8 or 9. I can't remember. So we're given a long division to do. What the teacher would do is we would go through long division. We would model it very much like in an exercise or a drill or whatever we would do in rugby. And then we were given 20, 30 questions to go. Now, they wouldn't get harder. They would just be slightly different all the time. So we need to do variations of the skill in order for us to actually progress in the sense of become more effective. It's called deliberate practice.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard work. It is, there are some stresses in it. Sometimes it might even be boring, but it's only boring really if we're not saying it's going to make me better. So you're quite right. Social media will give you, here are 70, 80 different ways to do this. And you could be doing it with this, 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 and this. But whatever way you do it, you've still got to do it. You've still got to go back and you've still got to do in rugby. You've still got to be able to catch the ball effectively. You've still got to be able to pass the ball effectively. You've still got to be able to tackle effectively. And you've still got to recycle the ball in rucks. Now, that you've got to do physically. And then you've got to make quite a lot of decisions around that. And that's, I mean, that's a whole different ball game as well.
Yeah, and that's where it gets really tough. Again, with social media, I think it's also, you said about the variety. Because of social media, I do find that there's just, for the options that we have, it's the flashy variations that are the ones that get traction. And I think what I was going to touch on when we were talking about the popular people or coaching methods that are popular versus actual coaching methods that are effective is, I think, one of the main jobs as a coach and as a player to be receptive to is the fact that the coach is there to not necessarily tell you what to do, more it's to show you the blind spots that you don't see or to present to you the things that you are not aware of. So you might think, oh, look at this cool offloading drill. Have you ever practiced this basic offloading? Maybe you didn't even know that you could do that. That's where they shed the light. That's where you do something basic. The problem is now it's a job of a coach almost to shed the light in almost exclusively those boring areas, because all of the other areas are now getting hyper demonstrated to everyone through social media, because that's what people are choosing to do in their downtime. They're scrolling through and it's only the stuff that looks visually appealing or stimulative that gets the traction, because that's just the way the algorithms work. And people know that, but it's not on their job to assess that. They're scrolling for fun. They're not scrolling to, you follow accounts that are, you feel are educational in the areas that you're passionate about. So rugby players will follow lots of rugby accounts to help prove their skills and et cetera. But they're still, you're not on Instagram because you're thinking, oh, how do I get better at passing? Or how do I get, you know, stronger legs? Or how do I, you know, make more effective rucks? It's almost shoehorned in there as sort of educational, but really it's sole job, as you said, like with Ben John, his stuff is mostly to entertain. And once you understand that, that's where you can sort of draw the line. And most players just don't, maybe they do want to draw the line, but it's just not their job. That's the coach's job, I think.
Yeah. And I think, Ben Will runs rugby programs for players. And when he runs those programs, they are set out, week one we'll do this, week two, week three, week four, week five. So that is a typical teaching program, a curriculum of skills that you're going to do. And it is not that any program like that, it's not a highlight reel. It is, we got to do this, then this, then this, then this. And our danger is that we go away from the program and we keep dropping in the fancy bits and we forget to do the other bits. You walk before you run. There are some dangers that we can almost spend too much time trying to hone something so much that we lose all the other bits which go around it. But we in rugby, very simply, if you cannot catch the ball effectively, you reduce your options, but also you reduce the team's options. Now, one of the amazing things about rugby is that it's a very cooperative sport. Probably one of the most cooperative. I mean, I mean, 100%. Any team sport is cooperative, but rugby, very much like American football, requires certain jobs to be done by certain people at certain times. Otherwise, things don't happen. And that then requires a lot of thought from the coach on how to make that part interesting. Now, I'm probably going to be very controversial when I say this. There's a term out there called off the ball coaching, which has been a phrase coined in the last 5 or 6 years about all the work that the 14 players who are not on the ball have to do when they're not on the ball. And it really is just, for me, it's just learning how to play rugby and understanding your roles and responsibilities on the pitch. You're always actually on the ball, even if you're not touching the ball. Mm-hmm. Your relationship to the ball is vital. The French used to call it they probably still call it the family of the ball, where you understand if the ball is in your hands, you are obviously the ball. But the player next to you is your brother or sister. So they're very close relationships. So their roles are probably, they're going to be taking the next pass, or they're going to be helping you get through the gap, or they're going to help you recycle the ball. The next two players who are sort of two passes away, they've got different decisions to make. And that's very complicated. This is why it's so complex, because there's so many different things you could do. You could be running in close. You could be spreading out wide. You could be calling. You could be looking for the next play. And just imagine what the third and the fourth and the fifth player has to do around the ball. Now, a TikTok video isn't going to coach a player to do that. It's virtually impossible. And the TikTok videos are not, Instagram videos are not set up to do that. So the best coaches are still helping players recognize their relationship to the ball all the time. I mean, it's in attack and defense. And the other problem that you've got people got to understand is that not everybody turns up for rugby training to be the full-on decision maker who's being able to see the wide pitch and saying, right, we need to play here, we're going to play a rugby here, need to kick here, we need to... Some of them are, all I love doing is I want to win my scrums, I want to make a big tackle, and I want to have some fantastic carries where I can absolutely thunder through, prove my physicality. And that's what I care about. If the backs go off and do something fancy, that's fine. As long as I get my fill, I fill my boots with this amount of contact and this amount of just enjoying playing with my team.
Okay, so I'm going to go a little bit off our schedule to ask this then, because we were going to talk about developing skills. I want to talk about developing like tactical awareness then, because what you're saying is absolutely true, and I think this is one of the hardest things to develop as an individual, because you obviously it's all part of the game of rugby, and the you it. Every decision that you make tactically within your relationship to the ball that isn't involving the direct skills that involve the ball, that's all still some level of skills, right? That tactical awareness to decide and your decision making and what to do. But it's obviously a lot more complex and difficult to do, I guess, for players. So what ways would you have of players being able to develop that level of tactical awareness, because you've got teams like the All Blacks, and particularly you've seen it a lot in the European rugby recently, how the French team plays or French teams play is very different to what we've seen from the English, from especially the Irish as well, where we seem to be a lot more, or I say we, the English and the Irish and those teams seem to be a lot more well-drilled. South Africans as well, they seem to be just the ultra-prepared teams. Whereas when you look at the French, probably to an extent, look at the Kiwis. They do a lot better job with just having that tactical nous. Every like they're familiar, their family bonds, I guess, if you're using that term, are just that much stronger because they all know what each other are doing. You could look at it, Fijians doing it in sevens as well. How do you develop that?
Well, I think there's a great danger is that you look in at, say, the All Blacks, Fiji and France, and you say, we want to play like this team. And you can only play like that team if you've got the players who can play it. And the Fijians are, you look at a typical Fijian sevens player, and they are enormous, quick, and they've got hands like dinner plates. So they are also environmentally, they play a lot of rugby, and their mindset is to play in a certain way. But it is, and again, it's a controversial topic. But my belief is that lots of teams have what's called a shared mental model. Everyone knows what's going to happen when someone does something. So if you're carrying the ball forward, I've played with you so many times that I know that you tend to offload off your right or go for the gap on the left, and that means I know where to run off you. And then as a team, we start to know where everybody is, what everyone's doing, and therefore they can feed off that. Now, what then happens is that players will come into those groups and they won't fit in. And they won't fit in for a number of reasons, which could be to do with their personalities, or they won't fit in because they're not that sort of player. So, I mean, when Scott Robertson picks his first All Blacks team, he will have, because he's coming in as a very well, highly respected coach with a lot of success, the 15 players he will choose will not be the 15 players that every New Zealander will think will be the right ones, because he'll be very clear on what he wants from the team, and that's what they will share. And hopefully for them, not so good for England, let's say, when they play them, that they will know why each player is doing what they're doing. Now, it goes round to your question, how do you do that for your team? Well, the first thing that you've always got to do, and I think I said this at the top of my answer, was that you've got to understand the strengths and weaknesses of your team. And your team have also got to understand that themselves. And I've been with plenty of teams say, right, we want to do this, this, and this. And I'm going to say, we're not. First of all, we want to do this from the lineup. Well, we've got to have a hooker who can actually throw that far. That might be an ambition, so we can work on that. Or we want to run this move. Well, at the moment, our fly half is very good off of their right hand, but not so good off their left hand. Maybe in 10 weeks' time, we can do it. And that's your number one place to be. And the second thing to do is to understand where you are as a team up against the teams you're up against. So again, we want to play like France, but we're going to be up against teams who are not going to allow us to play like that. So do we keep hammering at that, or do we play in a slightly different way? But in the end, if the players want to play in a different, in a certain way, and you can allow them to do that, as long as you set out what you think is possible, and then at the end of it, you say, have we achieved it? Yes. Then the scoreboard doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it this year with the girls' team. We talked the other week about the best games that they've been involved in. And some of them were included some wins that we pulled out of the bag. And some of them included losses, included some very big losses, where we achieved what we wanted to achieve. And that tactically is what we said. We said, we don't want them, for instance, against a very good team. We don't want them to break us on the inside. So if we spread across the field, if they beat us inside our outside centre, inside our number 13 in that channel, then mm-hmm. that's probably we haven't achieved what. If they get round us on the edge, they're fast, they've got great handlers, fine. We can't do anything about that. And we set out to try and do that. And in the games where we did it, the girls were able to come off and they were delighted because we'd achieved that. And it's something we set as a goal in the game. Now, if they know what to achieve, then they'll think tactically of how they're going to achieve it. So they're going to be making decisions before the game on how they're going to be affected, but they're going to make decisions in the game. So when you mm-hmm. when they come back in under the post, let's say they've scored a try against us. If they've scored a try on the outside, the first conversation they should be having is, that's fine. We did everything we could on the inside to stop them. They scored on the outside, fine. And if they scored on the inside, then they can say, right, someone will say, look, I'm sorry, I didn't get up in the line, or I've got to be faster in here, I've got to do this here. And the great thing is, on the occasions when I'm listening in and I'm not saying anything and they're saying that, you know you've nailed it.
Mm-hmm.
And other times you've got to come in and say, right, because you're knackered, you've tired out. You know what? Sometimes as a coach, you forget how tiring rugby is. You come into the huddle and you're all bright and breezy and they're like...
And you tell them, you got to work harder. You got to work harder.
Yeah, that's right. That's yeah. right. But you... That's the moment when you're going to be coming in and saying, right, look, I'm going to just say, you've done this. Let's work on that. Remember that we said we were going to work on this. Yeah. Well, let's do that. And sometimes some of the girls team I had, there were one or two players who almost had a running commentary of their game as they were playing it. So that was fantastic. One girl in particular missed a tackle. And she got up, and I could hear her saying, I've got to engage my shoulder. I didn't engage my shoulder. I've got to engage my shoulder. Because it's something we've been working on for the last 3 weeks. And then I got a picture of it in my mind. I wish we'd videoed it, because she then did engage her shoulder on the next tackle. And she got up, and she gave herself a little fist bump to herself.
Amazing.
Not to anyone else, but I saw it, and I told her about it after. She was very embarrassed that she did it. So I won't say what her name was. It's, that is when you know that tactically and from a skill level, you've got that right. I'm not saying get it right every time, but that's where you need to go. Understand your strengths and your weaknesses. Understand what, therefore, you can achieve. Set it out clearly. Let the players understand, develop that clearly, and then try it, test it.
I think understanding what it is that you're trying to achieve is huge, because one quote that you mentioned to me again on, I think it was our first one, you said about so many coaches claim to have 10, 20 years experience, but really what they've done is just coach the same season 20 times or 10 times. Mm-hmm. And I think being intentional is the way to improve your tactical. Even when you're watching rugby, I say this for players as well, like one of the best ways is to watch rugby intentionally, see what the players are doing, see what's going on. Like that's learning. That's the brain figuring out, okay, this is how these people are solving these problems. And then you go into your games or even your skill sessions and you're intentional with everything that you do. And that means that then everything becomes about things that you can control, not the ref, not the other team. Because at the end of the day, with the athletes that I take on board, you know, of all ages, we have the same discussion where we want to win the season, or I want to score X amount of tries. And I say, right, let's actually break that down into only things that you can control. Because you could do everything perfect, you just come up against a really good team. And that's like only 50% of players win every week. Like, that's the brutal reality of
rugby. Zero-sum game. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah.
And so to say everything is a failure if you're in that bottom 50%, it's not fair, right?
Yeah, the survivorship bias of we look at players who've got to the top and we look at what they've done, and it's not necessarily a good indicator of what's going to work for our players. Messi. Is used as one of the great footballers of our time. What did he do? What did he do? What did he do? So he was playing a lot of street football, and so therefore street football is a good thing. So absolutely free play. We should be encouraging our players to experiment and that sort of thing. But there are when he was playing street football, there were say 20 other kids who were playing street football, but they're not playing for Argentina,
right?
So what happened to them?
It's the same survivorship bias as we get with the All Blacks. With that generation of the All Blacks between 2018 and 2009, say, where they won like the back to back World Cups. They were the most successful team for the longest time, and what everyone took out of it was, oh, we've got to clean our changing rooms because that's what they do. And you're like, that's what you've come out with this thinking? That's why they're so successful? It's crazy to me.
There's a great term using more and more. It's called a lethal mutation. So I think the cleaning of the sheds was one small part of a very important thing. But what's come out is people think, well, we've got to go and clean our sheds.
Mm-hmm.
When in fact, if we really looked at it, it's been a bit more humble and understanding that we've got to work for each other. But you're quite right. It's almost they pick out small points and make them the point, when there's lots of things which happened, which they were, you could say that it was on the bounce of a ball.
Yeah.
South
Africa won this past World Cup. You could look at, the All Black, South Africans are way more prepared. They won three games by a point. So at what point is that like an amazing coaching that they won the tight games, or is that like one thing went wrong in any of those three games? Yes.
Yeah.
If one thing went wrong in any of those three games, they don't win the World Cup. What I want to do to finish off, if you have time for me, mate, is address the one important question, but one question I really wanted to get into was this differences in coaching boys versus girls, men versus women, because I know that you have some thoughts on it, and I know there's been a little bit of controversy about it recently. We have both men. My audience is mostly men, but we do coach and successfully coach and support the women's game as best we can and provide them with strength and conditioning as well. So I want to know your thoughts on this whole, I don't want to say scandal, because that makes it sound way more hypey than it is, but I just want to know your overall thoughts in coaching, because obviously you have experience coaching both.
Well, the first thing is that we need to look at it in two levels. One is there's some physical differences which we need to understand, and there's going to be differences in terms of hips and menstrual strike cycles and things like that. There are differences there. So you have to understand that when you're coaching, and that will mean that sometimes you are going to be able to achieve some things and not achieve others. So, but that is the same as coaching anybody who is built in a different way. So if you are coaching an 8-year-old, you would not be giving them the same strength and conditioning program as you would give a 24-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, there is a gender difference, but it's just the same as a difference in, say, age, or when you're coaching players who are in, it's like the Paralympic situations, then you are going to be coaching differently. So you understand your player, and then you coach the player who's in front of you. So when you're coaching girls and boys rugby, it is no different. You're coaching the same game, but you will be changing the way that you coach to suit the players who are at that developmental stage. Now, what that often means is that if you were to go and coach a group of under 19 boys and a group of under 19 girls, your coaching approach will be different for these reasons. The reasons are, is that environmentally, the boys will probably played a lot of rugby before they get to 19, and the girls have probably played a lot less rugby, so your coaching session will look different. But if you are coaching, say, not a development side, but a representative girls' side at under 19s, and maybe a grassroots side of boys, the level of skill and the complication and complexity will be different, to the extent you may be have been more complex with the skill levels with the girls. But it absolutely doesn't matter whether they're girls or boys. You work with them, you understand where they are at, and then you layer up what you're going to do, increasing the difficulty depending on simple things like their catch pass, their tackle technique, their rucking, but also their understanding of the game. So the myths come around things like girls are more emotional, girls ask more questions. That's wrong to think that. It is more often that sometimes we expect this to happen, so it then happens, or the players expect to do it because that's what they do. And it's not like that. The main problem comes in that often in sport is that going to coach the girls' team as a man is often seen as a backward step or a developmental step. You're going to go and coach the girls' team. Okay, so you're not actually coaching at the top level. You're going off and coach the girls' team. You know, well done you. You know, kudos for you to take a step back, which is obviously completely wrong. And the second thing is that people do it, say, oh, it's going to make me a much better coach because I will be working with the girls. And it's a stepping stone for me to go back into the boys because I've had this. Again, every time you go and coach a different group of players at a different developmental stage, you learn. You said right at the start, you've got to keep learning as a coach. And if you go and coach a girls' team and you've been only coaching men's teams, that's fantastic. You should and will enjoy the experience if you make it enjoyable for yourself. But don't see it as a favor. Don't see it as something which is going to make you a better coach, which therefore means you can step back into it. Go and do it because it's worth it. And I'm in quite a lucky situation now because I'm that old that I'm ambitious as a coach, but I'm not ambitious to go on and coach higher levels. I'm very happy to get in and coach. So I can do this, but would I ever at 30? At the age of 30, someone said, go and coach women's rugby. At 30, I can safely say I would have said, yeah, that's a sideways or a backward step for me. And obviously now, in hindsight, that would have been the wrong thing to say because it is the wrong thing to say. But it would have been a fantastic experience, and it wouldn't have stopped me becoming a better coach, but I would have needed to do it for the right reasons. So in simple terms, you're coaching a human being in front of you, understand their needs, understand where they are as a person, understand where they are as a team, and then coach.
Yeah.
Don't think that you have to change the way you coach to suit the gender. you may be swearing like a trooper. Mm-hmm. You may be saying things, and that might be absolutely fine for them. I don't think Percy has a good approach, but that might be fine for them. But unless you understand them, then you won't be a better coach for it.
Yeah, I think my opinion is you said it, like you shouldn't change the way you coach. It's strange that World Rugby put these guidelines out, because as you say, there's lots of myths in it, and even if they were generally true, which some of those things are, some of them, as you say, are myths, maybe, you know, but what's the point? Because you don't change the way you coach for a gender. You change the way you coach for the team that you coach, for the players that you coach, for the people that you coach. And it doesn't matter which gender these people are. It doesn't matter the age, doesn't matter their ability. You have to coach this is what you just said. You coach the people in front of you. And so I don't think it was even necessary that that World Rugby put this out, but I do think that it is necessary that people acknowledge that, like, there are different groups of people playing rugby, and that's kind of it. And we have to not necessarily cater the game to these people. We just, as coaches, we cater how we allow these people to play the game. I don't want rugby to change. That's one of my bugbears, is that they continually try to change the game. Whereas I think so many people can enjoy the game in however, whichever way they want. We just said about how the Fijians, the French, the English, more developed kids, less developed kids. All these people have an opportunity to play the game and enjoy the game. And so it's a coach's responsibility and a player's responsibility to enable that to happen. I don't think gender really matters in that either way. I certainly don't think a certain level is more worthy than another. I think if anything, like, it's in a sense where I try and get people to think of their rugby very differently when it's like, I'm not a pro. I don't need to dedicate my time to health and fitness, or I don't need to worry about, or not even health and fitness, like strength and conditioning, like specifically, I'm not a pro. Like, obviously it's I don't have to worry about that stuff, but I also think, well, actually the pros don't have to worry about that because they're getting everything given to them, or the higher levels, they're getting it. So you're still, they're also doing rugby because it's their job. You get to do rugby because it's something that you are choosing out of your valuable time to do. Therefore, why is that any less important? If anything, it's just as important. And to show how unimportant high-level rugby is, in England, you can have basically most members of the England team, maybe not Maratoji because he stands out a little bit, they could walk down Oxford Street and not too many people would bat an eyelid. They wouldn't recognize them. So why does that mean that his rugby is necessarily more quote unquote important or than anyone else? I think it's all in the eye of the beholder, you know? So if you enjoy rugby, or if the people that you're enabling to enjoy rugby as a coach or facilitating to enjoy rugby, that's not any less important or more important, you know?
Yeah. And I think it comes down to what people will quickly say is, I much prefer that game to this game. Oh, the skill levels are much higher. Well, it doesn't really matter. Do you enjoy it? I mean, I love watching all rugby. I go and watch my son's team play in the league he's playing. He's playing level four, level five rugby. Great games, really enjoyable games to watch. It is a different skill level. Things go wrong in a different way, but it's great fun to watch. You go and watch. So the most recently, I was involved with a prep school tournament where I was referee under 10s. I don't often watch under 10s or referee it. I loved it. It was messy. There was some great stuff. There was some stuff which was dreadful. And also,
I bet you could see the smiles on the faces.
Yeah. Well, sometimes the tears.
The tears as well.
Sometimes the complete, yeah. I'm not sure why I'm here. But I'm here because I make up the team, and others are absolutely enthralled in it. We played a touch game on, just a fun touch game on last Wednesday, and one of the captains of my girls' team, she was arguing the whole way through. That's mm-hmm. not a try. That's not a touch. And it was great because that for them was the most important thing. And other girls were just, you know, they hand me a beer because we're just having fun. And you're right. We have to change our attitudes to a certain extent to reflect what's in front of us, what we enjoy. Somebody's going to enjoy going to McDonald's. Someone's going to enjoy going to Nando's. Someone's going to enjoy going to have a Michelin two-star meal for lots and lots of different reasons. And we've got to just take a step back, be a little bit more relaxed about that, but also enjoy what we're doing, why we're doing, for the right reasons. And that's very hard. We're almost under pressure to enjoy. Mm-hmm. We were talking earlier about the Instagram life, and people are always posting things saying, you know, this is my office for the day, or look at this great meal, or I'm surrounded by friends. And there's no harm in doing that, but we are constantly putting ourselves under pressure to say, that was fun. I've ticked that off. How can I replicate that again? And I think it's called obliquity. It's very hard to create fun. Anyone who goes on runs a marathon, I mean, how is that fun? But for them, it is fun.
Yeah.
So I suppose my conclusion is to this, some summary or whatever it is that often you get the most enjoyment out of something where you've tried really hard and you can see that it's moved you forward. It may not have achieved exactly the success, but you can say, look, I did this. We achieved this. We did this together. Isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
Now, we didn't win the cup. We didn't get promoted. We lost more than we won, but we worked hard together. We had that look over the shoulder and a friend is next to you working hard for you. And that's an amazing feeling. Or you did it yourself. I researched this. I spent hours. I've got all these books. I've gone through them. I didn't use ChatGPT once to write this essay. And here it is. And that's an amazing feeling. And
yeah.
I'd like to say I'm going to recreate that throughout the rest of this day.
Yes. Try it, but you don't have to.
I know I'm going to go and do that now.
Yeah. I would like to just finish off with the same thing with, like, I remember when you said about watching different levels of rugby and sort of like reflecting on like what's the point of it. I had this conversation with a guy in the gym yesterday, just a guy I was chatting with. He plays vets rugby, you know, and he's like, he said next year he's going to be 50. And I remember thinking, oh, I wish I could have done that. Like, because I've now closed my road off to any rugby ever again because of the concussion. That's just the way I'm looking at it. Who knows? But then I also remember in my early 20s, I would look at vets rugby and I think, why would anyone want to do that? And it's only now it's dawned on me, or the last few years, since I've coached quite a few players in their 40s and whatnot, and you realize it's just fun. And you get to have so much fun in a different way to, like you say, running a marathon or anything else, in a different way to so many other routes that you can take in life. And I think you've got to remember that, and also remember that you could have more fun by doing it better. Like, the more active you are in that game, by the more successful you are in your little things, the things that you can measure yourself down, the things that you can control, you are going to have more fun. And there was a quote, it was by an entrepreneur. I can't remember who it was. Maybe someone can tell me in the comments below, but they say, if you're trying to choose between two different theories and one gives you an excuse for being lazy, the other one is probably the right one to do.
Yeah. Well, there you are. I'm going to live by that for the rest of the day. I'm going to do everything I'm going to do. If I can do it, be lazy. I mean, obviously there, you've got to pick the easiest hanging fruit. That's a good thing. That's a good coach. But
yes,
as you say, you've got to avoid, you've got to do a bit of the sweat, and unfortunately, We know that. You got to, I can't remember, you'll tell me better on this, but you've got to hurt your muscles to build your muscles.
Oh, I would even say it's not even, unfortunately, it's something that you just get to do to improve. The same as boring skill work or any endeavor, you know, it's never always going to be the Rocky montage, you know. I think now we're living in, yeah, social media is just like a constant nonstop Rocky montage, you know, which, yeah. I don't know. It's inspirational, but let's go do the hard things as well, but enjoy the path along the way. Dan, been great having you on, mate. Have you got anything to plug? I'll put all your links for the Better Rugby Coach and everything else. Sorry, Rugby Coach Week. Better Rugby Coaching. That's a throwback.
Yeah, that's an answer from the old days. Yeah, so yeah Rugby Coach Weekly. Please, you know, obviously just stick a link here. People can contact me and say, actually, Dan, you're talking tosh, and absolutely happily, because probably I am, and I'm always want to change my mind, but it's been great, and I've really enjoyed it because you know, not necessarily with thinking aligned, but some of the things you're throwing at me, I'm thinking, yeah, that makes sense, I've got to think about that. So I've really enjoyed it, so thank you very much for the opportunity to blab on.
I always love hearing you blab on, mate. It's always always makes for a good podcast, right? we never get to half the things that we want to talk about. Maybe we'll have to get you back on, but go enjoy your day, and remember to not choose the option that makes you be lazy.
No. I'm going to do the hard thing right now. Good. DJ, thanks very much.
Take care, mate.